Chapter 5. What next? It took him 3 tries to lock the door of the apartment. He slid down until he was on the floor, back against the door, legs splayed out in front of him. He tucked his hands in his armpits and ordered the caterwaul of panic to slow. It didn't mean someone was following him, he told himself. Someone could have been walking, strolling home. Who wouldn't have run like that when a man started yelling at a crazy kid who ran over boats to get away? He had to stare down this terror. He had to focus on what to do now, whether to hide or whether to run. It wasn't like Alfie was the best father in the world, not exactly a role model. There had been times over the years when he had pulled off a big job, 2 whole years living in the south of France. Sweet. But mostly he and March had bounced around Europe with a couple of 6-month stints in New York City and a very pleasant year in Spokane, Washington. March spent 6 months at a Swiss boarding school. They were both miserable. He still remembered the day he came out of class and saw Alfie leaning against a red convertible. Want to go for a spin? He asked. They'd driven to Spain. So mostly March had been homeschooled, if you could call it that. His education was spotty. He knew the population of Istanbul and how to get around Reykjavik and the names of Beethoven's symphonies, and could tell a Picasso from a Braque. But March couldn't multiply a fraction. He could calculate odds at a racetrack, though. They were together, a team, and there were plenty more good times than bad. March didn't know how to keep going without Alfie. He remained on the floor, back against the door. He was used to being alone. But when alone has the promise of company at the end of it, it isn't quite as lonely. This was as lonesome as the moon. The deep kind of lonesome that held hands with fear. All his life he'd felt as though something was missing. It would expand and contract inside him, like air inside a balloon. There were times he'd feel the space was so full that he'd turn to say something and be surprised to find there was no one there. Weird stuff. As he got older, he'd figured that the missing space was his mother. She died when he was 2, so maybe some part of his brain remembered her. But maybe all along he knew this feeling was coming for him. This much empty filling him up. The light was getting grayer outside. Soon the day would begin. The news would come on. The papers would hit the coffee houses and cafes. People would open their laptops. The landlady on the first floor would turn on the radio. Alfred McQuinn, world famous jewel thief on Interpol's most wanted list, was dead. There would be a photograph, the most recent one they had, and the landlady would know that Alfie McQuinn was Dan Sherwood in room 12. And she would call the police. She would say, "He has a son." And then the knock at the door would come and he'd be in the system. There would be paperwork and social workers and people who know best. March would land back in the States, no doubt about that, because he had an American passport. Well, he had many passports, but only one real one, and that was American. He had no relatives at all. Alfie's parents were dead, and he and March's mom had both been only children. Alfie thought she had family somewhere, Texas or Canada, he'd say, as if the two places were the same. But he'd never met them. So that meant foster care. March knew how to navigate airports and train stations, how to pack light, how to move through a city without being noticed, how to order street food in Shanghai and steak au poivre in Paris, how to find a cheap apartment. He knew where to go he knew where to go to buy a fake passport in 5 European capitals, and he knew how much it cost. Things he didn't know how to do: sit in a classroom, obey authority, follow rules.